Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Weekly Highlight Podcast. The regular season is beginning to wind down, but we remain hard-nosed to find you the best coaching-related content possible. Founder of DailyDiscipline.com, Brian Kite, started us off this week, delving into the issue of coaches seeking approval. Here, Kite brings to light the drastic changes in coaching that may lead to coaches seeking approval from others.
I think one, coaches have been vaulted to a spot where they're still on the same pedestal as they were, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. But like when I played high school football in the 90s, people who wanted to criticize any coach or not even just criticize, but have an opinion on anything that coach did, it was just conversations. That was it. That was the only place you could do it, was in conversations. And so that pedal still existed. The coach wasn't as big of a target back then as a coach is now, because there weren't as many avenues to share those opinions about the coach. Now these avenues where you get to see and hear and read and spread what people think about you is way bigger now. And so that's the second thing, is coaches are seeing and experiencing an exponential increase, actually experiencing what people think about them than compared to even in the 90s. And that's, we haven't spoken about that or talked about that a whole lot. Between media coverage, social media, television, all the different places, coaches are getting exposed to what people think about them 24/7 compared to, even 20 years ago. And so there's a big learning curve with being that exposed on that big of a pedestal, because you are a bigger target and you're seeing a lot more about what people think about you.
Finding the edge over your opponents is our focus on Tuesdays with Rob Everett. Typically, Everett and host Keith Grabowski share new technology with you, but we decided to address more of a known commodity this week, the stopwatch. Next, Grabowski and Everett share how you can attack a quick-moving offense with faster blitzes.
Because there's some pressures that can hit quickly, maybe where you overload a side and can get a gap right away, and then there's pressures that take a longer time to develop. And, for example, if you got a guy, you rely on a guy to loop two gaps to get to the quarterback, in reality, it might not be a great option for you in a particular week.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you could have the best pressure in the world, but if it doesn't get home, it doesn't matter. And if the offense you're going against is, predicated on quick game, a lot of times those elaborate pressures aren't necessarily going to get there. So there's no question getting some overload stuff, getting into some show things, to potentially, disrupt some rhythm with distraction in front of the quarterback, that does have value. Getting around the quarterback does have value. So you don't necessarily always have to get home. But, something that I learned on the offensive side in Memphis was, in quick game, especially with these guys that are getting the ball out quickly, a lot of times I've always thought and experienced people keeping everybody in quick game from a protection standpoint. But we kind of went the opposite direction that said, our quick game, we're going to use empty protection on quick game for part of our package, because if the ball is going to come out, we don't need to protect that long. Let the quarterback handle the hot people and then go from there. But it kind of goes back to pretty much what this podcast is all about here. Knowing what is there in this use of technology, in this case, relatively low tech, know your opponent, know what you can do so that you can make the best decisions from a scheme standpoint.
For Trends Day, former NFL coach Charlie Coyner and USA Football content coordinator Zach Dunn shared their knowledge of the sport with us. Here, Grabowski and Coyner address play action out of the pistol formation.
What we saw from Alabama the other day was really... I loved it. I saw right away, I think I tweeted about it, was those guys utilizing play action from the pistol with the reverse out. And Charlie, you and I, that was, I think, our first connection. You called me, must have been back around 2013, to talk to me about what we were doing with our reverse out in the pistol and what we were doing. And it was something that, you know, we actually, as we put it together, we were looking for people who were doing it. And it was your buddy, Jerry DiNardo, who was doing that a little bit at Indiana at the time. But the other day we saw, you know, quarterback catch a snap, reverse out from pistol. I think the first time they handed it off could have been, I can't recall, I think it was a counter. But then the next time, I think it was the next play, reverse out, and they hit a double post. And, you know, as I mentioned to you back then, and we talked about it on All 22 Tuesday, the power of that is really that you're getting some of the effect of what you would get under center with the quarterback turning the back to the defense. Now you get that in the pistol as well.
Yeah, and we talked about this yesterday too. I mean, I don't know how fast your guys did it, but Tua on the run plays that I ended up watching, it was so daggone fast that it's like, I mean, it is spinning. And obviously there's a lot of work that goes into that. There's no question, just the tape doesn't lie from the standpoint of the Tennessee linebacker was, you know, play side, so to speak, was all the way across the ball, or the line of scrimmage, excuse me, by the time he realized that it was actually a play action. And we touched on this a little bit, you know, yesterday too, that, you know, from a standpoint of the play action off of that, you know, there's a lot of mechanics and that ball's got to get up and out and some things like that. But there's no question. I mean, the more, you know, John Shoup used to always say, and I know he got it from somebody else. But the more you can make something look like something else, the better off you're going to be. And that play right there looks exactly like their run play. And it's, I mean, if I'm a linebacker or a quarter safety, I don't know, not probably till he's back there on his hitch getting ready to throw that post behind me, then am I going to really understand.
Continuing our deliberate practice series with USA Football's Senior Manager in Education and Training, Andy Ryland. Here, Ryland discusses reminding your players of their tactical assignments on the sideline.
Right, there's no doubt, right, that we know that on gap schemes, we're going to press it from inside to out, but in the heat of the moment, right? So those gentle reminders, those keeping guys engaged, things floating around social media, everyone is seeing the Monday night clip of Bill Belichick talking to the Patriots defense. At this point, they're up 24-0, but they're still locked in and focused on the process. And I think these kind of ideas where you can plant the seed early in the week, like you said, remind them, that allows you to have that conversation on the side of the field that kind of centers everybody, takes a deep breath, brings them back to relaxation. Hey, fellas, no worries. Hey, we just got off the field. The other team got a big stop. We come back, the offense, we take a deep breath. Hey, third down, boys, we know the package. We know what we're trying to accomplish. You know, boom, 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 we're going to hit third and six next time. Here's the goals. Here's what we're looking at. I think it just helps communication, and that helps the athletes stay calm because they've heard the message before. Trying to change in the heat of battle becomes the challenge when everything's on the line. And for our seniors, again, you know, the careers are potentially over.
To close out the week, Grabowski returned to a coaching legend's advice. Next, Grabowski will share an excerpt from Bear Bryant's book, Building a Championship Football Team, where Bryant talks about one of his greatest accomplishments in coaching.
The day our 1956 team at Texas A&M defeated the University of Texas 34-21 in Austin. You like to win them all, but the real thrill is the story behind this particular game. It actually started in the spring of 1954 when I first went to Texas A&M. The Aggies had not won the Southwestern Conference Championship in 15 years. We hoped to remedy this situation in time, so we commenced building our program that spring. In the fall, we took our players to Junction, a small place in South Texas, for preseason training. The work was hard and the weather was hot, and many boys dropped to the wayside. Many did not want to pay the price to be a winner. That fall, I imagine those who had not remained for early season practice felt they had made a wise decision, since we won only one football game. Those who stayed, although beaten in every game except one, seemed more determined than ever to prove their point. They fought their hearts out in every game, and although beaten, they won the admiration and respect of everyone for their courage. While it was disappointing to lose, I felt deep down in my heart if those boys stayed, they would be champions by the time they were seniors. The following year, we had a good team, but we lost the final game of the season to the University of Texas And with it, we lost the conference championship. So close, yet so far, was the elusive championship and a victory over Texas. From the beginning of the 1956 season, the determination of the senior group was evident. Consequently, we went into the final game of the season with Texas and Austin undefeated. There was more to it than just a mere football game. The Aggies had not beaten the University of Texas in Austin for a period of 33 years. In fact, they had never beaten Texas in Memorial Stadium, the site of the 1956 battle. The afternoon of November 29th, 1956, could mean a great deal to this group of boys who started setting their sights at Junction in 1954. The public was aware of the fact that these boys could win the Southwest Conference Championship, have an undefeated season, and break the jinx at Memorial Stadium. They were probably not aware the stakes were higher. These boys had a chance to prove to themselves that they were men, that they could and would do what it takes, no matter how tough it may be, to become champions. The greatest thrill was not in the final score, 34-21. The thrill was watching those boys work, grow, and develop, and rise from a season in 1954 where they only won one game to an undefeated season in 1956. These boys paid the price to become champions. They were champs then, and they will always be champions because they know, understand, and are willing to do what they must do to be successful.
Thanks for listening to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast this week. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure to follow us on our Twitter account for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Read our show notes, analysis, and coaching articles at blogs.usafootball.com and check out our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. Finally, subscribe to us on SoundCloud, Google Play, and Spotify, as well as give us a 5-star review on iTunes. As always, be sure to check back next week for more one-of-a-kind content.